This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald. Here's a segment from our show, Kelly and Company, that airs weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio. From your TV, enjoy Kelly and Company, Eastlink, channel 887, and MTS customers, channel 704. Visit AMI.ca/audio for a list of channel locations in your area. Kelly McDonald with Ramya Muthan.
Let's get into our Friday app talk with our friend John Beeler of The App Show.
This is The App Show, unlocking software secrets for smartphones, tablets, TVs, and more.
John, there's a reason why you're the expert, because I'm looking at some of the stories from today and I'm like, I don't even know, can't even remember or put together the context behind some of these stories. So you really have to let us know what the heck is going on in the tech world. Some of the stuff is not so good. Okay, so starting with TELUS, they're blocking Apple's iCloud private relay in Canada, but there's a fix. So before you tell us about the fix, can you explain the context?
Sure. So with the iOS 15 firmware update that came out a little while ago, mm-hmm. Apple added something called iCloud Private Relay if you were a subscriber to iCloud Plus, which I think most people are if you have an iCloud account that you're actually paying for, and may even be available in the free version. And so they're calling this a beta. And essentially what it does is it hides your IP address and your browsing activity in Safari on your phone, and it encrypts it basically so that nobody, Apple, the carrier that you're using to connect to, and in a lot of cases, the Wi-Fi that you're connecting to, it hides all of that information. It's essentially like a VPN that's built into your phone in that respect. And There was a concern last week that a lot of people, specifically TELUS users, were having problems where it wouldn't enable this feature automatically. You'd get a pop-up notification saying, this isn't working right now. It's not enabled. It will be re-enabled once you get off TELUS. Which, of course, if that's your carrier, you're not going to get off TELUS.
That's
right. So It turns out it actually is a fairly easy fix. And it might have been something just in the way that Apple was presenting these error messages that sort of implied that carriers were the ones responsible. In the U.S., T-Mobile was also accused of what TELUS was accused of. Since then, it seems to have been clarified. I think Apple did something on their side to fix the messaging. But the easy thing to do, if you do get this message saying your private relay is turned off, you just need to go into your settings, cellular, and then in the cellular data options, there will be a limit IP address tracking. Just make sure that's on, and that'll turn on all these great features, which are very desirable. Basically, it's hiding all of your movements, hiding who you are to the carrier, and also to the websites for the most part.
So right now, is it enabled in most people's anyway, or should everyone just go in and do that?
Enable. There's no guarantee that it's turned on by default.
Right.
So I would just go into your cellular settings and make sure that limit IP address tracking is turned on. I found that it was turned on for my phone, but my phone's kind of weird because I get to play with all the betas. So who knows what the default setting should be. And it can also change when you change carriers as well, like if you're roaming and that type of thing. So just make sure that you go in and take a look. If you get a negative message saying that your private relay is turned off, this is how you turn it back on.
Excellent.
Okay, but it's not one of these opt-out features that Apple has automatically opted you in for, like some of the other privacy things that you've mentioned in the past?
Yeah, no, this is something that it should be turned on by default. And it's definitely something you want turned on. It's a win-win for the user. So if you see an error message, this is a fairly simple thing to fix.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Canon, let's discuss them for a moment. It tells users how to bypass its printer ink DRM. What's happening here?
So as we've talked about, there's a global chip shortage.
Right.
And it's a problem for almost every single company in the world that uses technology in their products to get enough of the same chips in volume. And Canon, along with pretty much every other printer manufacturer that makes ink cartridges, puts a chip in their cartridges that basically tells the printer that this is legitimate Canon ink. Because if you try to put one in that's not, or if you refill your cartridge, it will basically say, hey, this isn't right, and give you an error message and basically won't allow you to print. But because of the chip shortage, Canon hasn't actually been putting these chips in their cartridges for a while now. And there's a simple workaround. If you get this error message and you have bought a legitimate Canon cartridge, simply ignore the error message and just keep on printing. They've essentially said, we're not going to turn on this feature right now because we can't guarantee that the cartridges that you have are going to have that chip in it. Okay. It's a really weird time in our timeline.
Yeah, like where we can't even trust our error messages because manufacturer are going, sorry.
It's kind of like ignoring the light in your car there, the check engine light. Right? Oh, don't worry about that.
Exactly.
But so if you use another one that's supposed to work, shall we say, an off-market cartridge, will this also not come up because of that as well?
That's exactly what this is.
Yeah.
And you can refill your cartridges too now, it seems. So I don't know. Is this the end of DRM? Maybe.
Wow. Interesting.
At least for printer cartridges.
It would be nice for people to have option, right?
Although, ironically, around the same time I saw this story, there was lots of stories about who still uses printers. So.
Not just people have been asking me about scanners lately. I'm like, they still sell those? Okay.
Let's
talk about Google Home for a second, because apparently they're about to get slightly worse. Now, when I saw the story, I was like, hey, mine's already doing that. But anyway, Sonos sued them and won. So what was the lawsuit about?
So the lawsuit that Sonos had against Google was that their smart speaker technology infringed on some patents that Sonos had. Specifically, the ability to group and cluster multiple Google audio devices. So say you had a number in your living room.
Yeah.
They were actually selling this as you can add a stereo field. And basically, you can have your Google TV or your Chromecast or whatever you're using on your TV to stream content or just watch music or watch content or listen to music. You could actually pair these speakers so you could have left and right and all that stuff. So they wouldn't just be this monolithic sound. And that's one of the patents that Sonos had. And the other thing is you can't even adjust the volume with your phone. Because right now, if you pair with these devices, technically you're using Bluetooth, and Bluetooth speakers you can adjust from the source just by adjusting the volume. Well, that's also one of the patents that Sonos had in respect to how these smart speakers operate. So essentially, this is a huge downgrade to Google's multi-room audio features because you can't synchronize these speakers anymore because you have to individually adjust the volume of them all, and you probably can't have this stereo feel effect happening anymore because of these patents. What I'm curious about though is I assume that Amazon has a similar set of patent breaking features in their smart speaker, because I know I use those features on mine.
Yep.
And I haven't heard yet if that's the next lawsuit that Sonos is going to be bringing towards Amazon, or if there's just enough differences in how the implementation is that they're going to be exempt from that. But this is a pretty big deal, and I'm kind of surprised that Google wouldn't just license the technology and or literally just buy Sonos because they're so huge.
Huh. It's interesting to see what might happen in the meanwhile. Like, you don't know what these moves mean because what's our desired move? We'll go after them. Maybe if we sue them, they'll say, well, it's cheaper just to buy them. Take them over. Maybe that's this crazy, method in some of the moves that we see. But when you talk about taking away so many things that people are just rely on every day to enjoy their speakers, that's pretty phenomenal. Also, what forward thinking of Sonos? Just in general, putting this together, and we'll get to make sure our patent is solid on this.
Yeah, no, and the ruling is that basically Google has 60 days to get its devices into compliance. And that basically means they have to degrade or eliminate product features. And in some cases, people would have bought these speakers specifically for these features because the Google speakers are a lot cheaper than the Sonos speakers.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Like by 10 times.
Yep. Cheaper. How do you, in this day and age, you know, when you see that 60 days, I gather you just send out notes or just your speaker itself at some point, you know, it tells you, or you just stop using and say, well, hey, what's going on? And ask the question, because we do find that if something has changed, you just, hey, I can't do that anymore. What's going on? Are you broken or whatever? And you get your answer. I that is a ridiculous short amount of time.
Yeah. Well, in what we've seen in the past with these types of things, I could see Google offering to buy back or refund you the money on those devices if that was the reason why you bought it. This isn't the first time this has happened to Google and to other companies. And
but
Google
how would
can
you
certainly
prove
afford.
Well,
you might not even have to. As long as you have one on your account, you can just basically request a refund and and they would do it that way. You might get it in the form of a Google Play credit or something like that. But
I'm sure they're going to do something with Sonos. It seems to me the most straightforward, logical way, as long as a court accepts it and allows something to go through, like you said, whether it's licensing and back payment or whatever it might be.
Yeah. Well, and this, I mean, I don't have any numbers to know how many people this could affect, but I would imagine it's pretty big. Google made a pretty big push the last couple of years with their smart speakers specifically designed to be high quality audio speakers. And so this is going to have a pretty big impact potentially to that whole division of Google, whether they shut it down or whether they embrace Sonos, license it, and or like we talked about, acquiring them.
Well, then you'd have the same issue with Amazon. So the reality is maybe this is Sonos is just license it from us. We'd love it, guys. And Amazon, what did you say over there in the corner? Well, here's our money.
It's like, you know, when you make songs on the radio that sound exactly like every other song, but you know that you're not breaking any rules because you manipulated it just enough. Maybe that's what Amazon's doing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll keep posted on that, but... sounds interesting. Okay, we have a few minutes left, and not to put you on the spot, but do you have anything else from the Consumer Electronics Show that you didn't chat with us about when we talked to you a few weeks ago that you may want to mention? Something else that stood out?
There's just so much. I mean, that was the surprising thing is we were expecting this show to be very small.
Yeah.
And it certainly was, but what was there was still... you know, CES quality, and there was a lot of interesting tech there. Last time I touched on some of the health tech and the personal safety and security tech, there was a lot of not the big companies, but a lot of smaller or companies you never even heard of in the electric vehicle space. There was a lot of really interesting tech on display. The problem with CES is a lot of times the content that we see there, it may never see the light of day.
Right,
it's more of a proof of concept. And so one of the more interesting things that probably the most talked about, well, there's two things that were the most talked about things at CES, at least in my opinion. One was BMW had a car that actually was covered in e-ink displays, like right out of a Kindle, that would essentially allow the car to change color.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And
that sounds wild.
The thing is it was animated. So you can actually like, presumably you're not driving while it's animated, but essentially it would change the color from white to gray and shades in between.
Yeah.
And
it's like LED
to see this thing
lights.
In person. Well, the thing is it looked like it was paint, right? Like,
because
we were walking towards this car and we saw it changing because we were outside and it was like, oh, okay. It actually does change color.
Yeah, so we were talking about that for if it was a hot day, changing it to white.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, so that was really interesting. Although it didn't seem very practical, at least in the prototype that we saw, there was some wear and some damage to it because I think it's fairly fragile. Yeah.
Well, John, first of all, never get to know what the second thing is, at least not this week, because we got to go. But thank you for highlighting that one. That's really interesting by BMW. Talk to you next week.
Yeah. All right. Take care.
John Beeler of The App Show. Join us for our Friday app updates.
We tell them, not enough time. Let's go. And then we have time. But anyway, we'll be back in a moment with Karen McGee for her report from Ottawa.
You've been listening to Kelly and Company. If you're hooked, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast platform. And be sure to leave us a rating and review. Or you can listen live from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.